Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, Dr. Toni and I are going to be talking about constipation in mamas and in kids too. We're going to get into kind of what should we look for when we're having a stool, you know, what's kind of expected or ideal, some causes of constipation, and what you can do about, and even some tests to think about getting as well. So let's jump into the topic of the day, Toni. How are you in terms of digestion? Or, you know, as a kid or now?
Well, you know, as naturopathic doctors, we typically like to talk about poo because I think it's just such an important thing to pay attention to when it comes to our overall health, getting rid of our garbage, including especially, you know, as mamas with hormones and hormone balance, we really want to be eliminating our hormones so that they're not reabsorbed and recirculated. And then with kids, just like, especially, you know, potty training and all that kind of thing. With my focus with Frankie, I just want going poo to be a really like stress-free thing, a really normal thing that you do, not a big deal. You sit down, you go poo, you know, that's it. But unfortunately, that's not always the case with kids and adults. And I think that way because, you know, when I was growing up, I had some tummy issues and that kind of thing. So I am more focused on, okay, how can we really get it to be as, you know, the best as possible? I think that's a lot of experience with, you know, a lot of moms out there as well that, you know, maybe things are less than ideal right now.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, we want to make sure it's a pleasant experience for our kids. There's nothing embarrassing about it. You know, still I notice some kids, they're not able to have their stool at daycare or school and they just have it at home. But hopefully they're going, you know, at least 3 or more times a week, because constipation technically is defined as less than 3 bowel movements a week in kids and adults. But ideally, you know, they're going a little bit more regularly, or we're going a little bit more regularly. Another sign of constipation could be, you know, discomfort, even with daily bowel movements. So it's like harder to pass. You could see your kid kind of making faces or screaming out, potentially looking uncomfortable. And then we even know what our stool looks like is so key, right? I think this is a common conversation we have with our patients, you know, mm-hmm. Does it sink? Does it float? What color? What shape is it? And, you know, the listeners may be familiar with the Bristol stool chart. We'll link to that in the show notes, but it goes through what different stools could look like and if that's, you know, good or bad. I guess I shouldn't say bad, but, you know, ideal or suboptimal. But ideally, mm-hmm. Your stool is more kind of like a sausage or banana shape, as I describe it sometimes. Ideally smooth, easy to pass, and soft, but still has some sort of a shape, right? It might have a few, you know, cracks on the surface, but ideally it's still formed. It's a, you know, medium shade of brown. It can vary based on if you're taking an iron supplement, it might be a little bit darker, depending on your diet. You know, with beet, sometimes there might be a little bit of a red tinge. Sometimes, you know, you could see maybe a little bit of green if you're eating a lot of green vegetables, although that could be a sign of maybe like a bile issue. And typically you want your stool to sink so it's not floating. That could be some fat malabsorption. But everybody's a little bit different. I think the key is it's easy to pass. There's some sort of shape with it. There's nothing weird in it, right? We don't want to see blood or mucus or weird undigested food, like corn is pretty hard to digest, right? So that's a common one we could typically see in our stools, but you don't want to see a lot of particles of food as well.
Yeah, and because even, you know, corn can be used to actually, you know, find out how long your transit time is. You know, how long does it take your food to go through your entire digestive tract and get out and come out the other end? So, you know, if you're seeing corn in your stool, that's completely normal. It, you know, I just tell people it means that you didn't chew up every single, you know, piece of corn possible, because it's not possible for your stomach and your digestive system to really break down that hard coating of the corn as well. So, yeah, and I think, you know, I think not a lot of people are familiar with the Bristol stool chart, but, you know, to even like, you know, I encourage people to take a look and kind of look at what type your poo is. And I always think of like type 4 and ideal, maybe even type 3, but you can kind of see, you know, goes from all the way from type 1 being kind of small, hard to pass, to type 7 being really, you know, watery, almost kind of diarrhea stool. But, you know, when we're focusing on, you know, if you are having constipation, whether it's, you know, type 1 or type 2 hard to pass stool, or not frequent stool, you know, something to ask is like, why, you know, what are some of those causes that can cause constipation in both your kids and yourself? Definitely the first thing I think about is, are you drinking enough water? And this could be, you know, a really simple thing to start with. Also, another question is, are you getting enough fiber? Especially fiber from veggies, also fruit. You know, are you moving your body that's in a way that's really going to support that circulation of your digestive tract? Definitely a key point right now is, you know, how is stress impacting your digestive system? Because especially if you do have a tendency towards it, like an IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, with some constipation, that's really important to look at, you know, how stress, how that mind-body connection is maybe causing constipation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be a big one, right? So stress, even just a change in routine, or when we used to travel back in the day, right, where mm-hmm. people go away, yes, you may be eating differently. But even if, let's say, they went to the cottage and still ate similar foods, just that change in location and change in routine can really affect the bowel habit. And some people just hold it more. They're not as comfortable going when they're at somebody else's house or not in their own bathroom. So just being really conscious of that is really key too. And kids, not a lot of people realize, but there's certain foods that we give that can actually contribute to constipation. So raw carrots are good for constipation. There's some good roughage. Of course, if the child's too young or if it's infant, you're not necessarily going to give them that. But cooked carrots can potentially aggravate or contribute to constipation, as can unripe bananas. I know most kids like sweet bananas that are ripe, but it's mm-hmm. just something to pay attention to. So what you're giving your kids can be influencing it. And then, you know, we'll get into some of the great foods that have high amounts of fiber to incorporate, but you want to think about those potential triggers. And then looking at, you know, is there a hypothyroidism, especially in adults, right? So if the thyroid's not working properly, we'll link to the episode we did on hypothyroidism, but everything slows down, including your gut, including metabolism. So there, that goes hand in hand as one of the symptoms of hypothyroidism is constipation. So you're going to want to get that checked out as well. And then when you are in a stressed out state, you're not going to release the stomach acid and the enzymes to break your food down, because your body is basically in fight or flight mode. Even if it's just, you know, worried about a pandemic or a presentation at work, your body's not ready to receive that food. But, you know, we try to eat in those moments, and that can contribute to a lot of GI upset. And some people it could go as in constipation, some people it can go and turn into diarrhea, but you're just not going to absorb the nutrients from your food either.
Absolutely. And that's where it can also kind of reduce the motility, or like how your muscles work to move everything down. And it can also even influence your microbiome or your gut bacteria and kind of throw off that balance. Also, you know, something that can kind of work in a number of different ways is some actually some medications can really slow down your digestive system. And, you know, there's, you know, a number of different mechanisms for it. But, you know, you can look at, are you taking certain medications, or are you your kids taking certain medications on a regular basis, whether that's NSAIDs like ibuprofen, certain allergy medication can impact that, as well as certain medications that are used to treat urinary incontinence. Also, you know, blood pressure medication, and especially a really common one is opioid painkillers, you know, something like Tylenol with codeine. Those will really impact your digestive system as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to take a look at all of those. And kind of a outlier, but some people do suffer from is nerve damage, right? So nerve damage to the nerves that govern the digestive system, whether it's from, you know, a stroke potentially, or a trauma or accident. So that's also something to look into. And physical medicine, osteopathy, pelvic floor physiotherapy might be some things to explore as well.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as moms, and even kind of before moms, I mean, there's when I talk about poo with my patients, a really common pattern that I've seen, is something that we call, in traditional Chinese medicine is called, you know, the liver overacting on the spleen. But it's this idea of maybe being a little bit more constipated before your period. And then when your period comes, you get a kind of more loose stools. Or if you have, you know, real issues with constipation, you may have regular bowel movements only when you have your period. So that kind of that PMS pattern is something to really kind of pay attention to as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good point. So you want to help work on balancing your hormones too, because that definitely will influence your digestive system. And then thinking about, yeah, why do we want to have regular stools? Obviously, you know, we don't want to be full of all this stool, and, you know, which actually carries toxins that we're supposed to eliminate. And if we don't pass a stool, at the very least, we're going to feel really gassy potentially and bloated and uncomfortable. But yes, we can reabsorb various toxins. It's a way for our body to eliminate harmful substances and break down products of our hormones. And if we don't eliminate it through a stool, yes, it may get back into our circulation, which we definitely don't want. And constipation can go hand in hand with headaches, right? And that can be reabsorption of different toxins, for example, also dehydration as well. But you're just going to feel really crappy, for lack of a better word, because you're not crapping.
Exactly.
I guess I can say that. That's not really a swear word, but
definitely.
And then we know, yeah, if the stool is sitting there and it's building up and you're not passing, it can actually start to stretch your colon and your digestive tract, and you can get what's called megacolon. So then the signals aren't working properly and things aren't able to move through. It's more likely to sit in the digestive tract, all the stool in there. And then in kids, sometimes you see this as encopresis, where there's actually a little bit of stool leaking out because there is actually constipation and a larger piece of stool is stuck in there and becomes impacted. And then little bits kind of come out at different times, whether it's when they're sleeping or when they're trying to have a bowel movement, you'll see a little bit on their stool. This can be really embarrassing and traumatizing for kids. And then this can feed forward, you know, them holding on to their stool and trying to clench, and which can just aggravate the problem even more. So we don't, you know, want that to happen. We want to prevent that as much as possible.
Absolutely. So, I mean, especially, you know, the question is, okay, what do we do about it? And there is a piece of like, can we figure out, you know, what the actual cause is? And are there some things to rule out? I mean, especially for us moms, but even, you know, certain things that you can even rule out with your kids. And some of the tests that we kind of think about as naturopathic doctors are to, again, look at the digestive system and how well it's working. That idea of, you know, is there enough stomach acid being produced, or is there a lack of that kind of digestive response to your food that's kind of impacting your digestion and even slowing down your bowel movement? So doing something like an HCL challenge in adults, where you take a tablet with some betaine HCL, which is hydrochloric acid, does that actually help to support your digestion and, you know, your bowel movements? Absolutely, looking at, like we said, you know, what is going on with your thyroid? Is there any hypofunction or slow function of the thyroid? And that, like, you know, we mentioned, we'll link to our thyroid episode. We talk about, you know, the blood tests that are really important to see if your thyroid is working properly, because if it's not, it can impact your digestion. And then there are a couple of tests to really look at that balance of bacteria in your digestive tract. You can do some really comprehensive stool testing, more comprehensive than, you know, what maybe a family doctor would order in terms of a stool testing, where you can look at how well, you know, food is being digested, what kind of balance of bacteria is in the stool, are there any markers for inflammation, that kind of thing. You know, there's some really great stool testing done through some specialized labs in the States. You know, I think of something like, you know, a comprehensive stool analysis or a GI map. What can also be done is looking for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. There is a type of SIBO that can cause constipation, where there's an overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine that can, you know, throw off bowel movements and create irritation, inflammation that impacts the digestive system and, you know, cause other issues in terms of pain, brain fog, skin issues. So a SIBO breath test is, again, done by a specialized lab and can give us an idea of if there's that overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine.
Mm-hmm. Those are some great tests to choose from, because as naturopaths, we always want to get to the root cause. We don't want to have to resort to a patient relying on, you know, a laxative long-term forever and ever and ever. Of course, we don't want our kids or us to be uncomfortable, and we can talk about some natural ways to help acutely, and then obviously looking at the long-term causes to rebalance the body, so we don't need those kind of band-aid solutions. Because one of the big kind of band-aid solutions, if you will, is using Restoralax or Miralax. This is a common prescription from in the medical profession, even for young kids, right? And this is actually polyethylene glycol 3350, or however you want to say it, is the active component in there. And what it does is it actually just draws water into the digestive tract and increases the frequency of bowel movement. So it kind of like hydrates your stools to soften them, and it increases the frequency too. So yes, it does help kids and adults have stools more frequently and potentially with less pain, but there's some, you know, some potentially harmful side effects if used especially long term. Some of the side effects of Restoralax can be some abdominal cramping, some bloating. They could get diarrhea, so go in the opposite direction, have lots of stools and gas and nausea. And in terms of the Restoralax too, you want to be careful, because there's a potential link in reports of kids who have used it getting tremors, tics, and obsessive compulsive behavior. So there's still a lot we don't know about the usage in children and those under 18, and especially long-term use. So you want to be careful. And then a lot of patients I see typically are using Senna, and that may be like a stopgap if you're really uncomfortable, but ideally it's not something you rely on all the time, right? It's kind of like that band-aid solution. So that is, it does have that laxative effect, but you want to be careful because there are some negative side effects and you can become dependent on it. So if you stop using it, you can be constipated because your body's just so used to it. So you don't really know, is it constipation or is it because you become dependent on it after a while? Senna can cause electrolyte imbalances such as in potassium. digestive side effects, like I just mentioned with the Restoralax. You can get little dark spots on your intestinal tract called melanosis coli. So this may be seen on different scopes. And then I didn't realize this, but apparently there can be finger clubbing, so changes to your fingers over long-term use, as well as kidney inflammation. So you don't want to have to rely on the Senna. You want to get to the root cause and figure out why there is the constipation in the first place. And then, Tony, you found some data in terms of what it can be contaminated with, right? Where there were tiny amounts of substances. Yep.
Yeah, there has been some concerns in the States, especially where, there was an FDA investigation in 2014 in Miralax where they did find tiny amounts of ethylene glycol and diethylene glycol in there. Now, these are some compounds that are associated with antifreeze. With all batches of Miralax that they tested, that is that pig 3350, they found those. Now, these small amounts of these kind of toxic contaminants are considered acceptable in the final product and considered safe. Now, is that something that you are comfortable with? This is something that a lot of parents don't realize. You know, you think, okay, I'm taking something that my doctor is recommending, or I'm taking something at the drugstore that's on the shelf. It should be tested. It should be safe of any contaminants, but that's not always the case. And even, you know, Miralax, or, you know, what it's called in Canada is by the brand name Restoralax. Even on their website, they absolutely state that the safety and efficacy of Restoralax for use in children under 18 years of age has not been established. And so don't use it unless advised by a doctor to. Also, with something like Restoralax, for adults, it's not meant to be used daily. It's meant to be used for occasional constipation. So it really is that piece of making sure that you're really looking at what is the root cause. And especially, you know, from my standpoint as a naturopathic doctor, using something like Restoralax or depending on something like Senna, I find that, you know, it does provide that band-aid approach because it can be effective, but are there even more effective things that can actually get to the reason why and really helping to correct the issue? So not only do you not have dependence on those kind of products, but you're really, you know, correcting the issue itself.
Definitely. Yeah. We want to get to that root cause for sure. So we can get into, you know, we talked about the testing, but what can you actually do when there is constipation? So water, 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 I know. And it's like, yes. Okay, well, how much water? So there's a loose guideline. So about 8 ounces of water, like times by their age. So if they're one, they get, you know, an 8 ounce glass of water every day. If they're two, they get 2 8-ounce glasses a day. 8 ounces translates into 250 mils. So you can kind of gauge it that way. And, you know, up to 2 liters, you don't want to have, like, I don't know, a 20-year-old drinking a ridiculous amount, but that's kind of a baseline to think about, right? So if they're constipated, you might bump up their water a little bit more and see if that makes a difference. And ideally, you know, pure water. We know some of the fructose can cause diarrhea in some kids, but don't use that as a treatment, right? You're going to get lots of negative effects from that. And then the fiber, you want to aim for, it's actually quite a bit in kids, more than you probably think, but, you know, a kid 1 to 3 years of age, you want to get about 19 grams a day. 4 to 8 years of age, about 25 grams. And then above that, approximately, you know, 30, 38 grams, maybe as a teenager, you know, a little bit higher. when they're a little bit older. So that could look like, you know, if they're getting a half a cup of beans or legumes, that could be about 6 grams of fiber there. A half a cup to cooked veggies could be about 4 grams, half a cup of fruit, about 3 grams. So you just want to add it all up and get a sense of how much you're giving yourself or your kids and see, okay, do I fall within those ranges? And if there's constipation, what can I do to bump it up? Do I need to add in some ground flax seeds? Do I need to add in some prunes, some more broccoli, berries? These are all great sources of fiber as well.
Absolutely. And another one that I always think about is dates as well. Now, of course, you know, we talked in our sugar episode that we'll link to that, you know, again, dates have sugar in them. But again, there's a great source of fiber. And especially if you're using dates as a sweetener instead of sugar, you know, I'm thinking of my breakfast bar recipe that where it's made with bananas and dates and other fruit. I mean, that's a way that, you know, it's if that's what you're relying on for your snacks, for yourself and your kids, that's a great source of getting that in. Also something that you can use is something like chia seed pudding, which can, again, provide some good fiber. That along with flaxseed, I always think about those kind of seeds because you get that fiber, but you also get some healthy omega-3 fatty acids as well. So that can be a great way of just increasing fiber and a tasty way of increasing fiber as well.
Definitely. We've got to make it tasty, especially for our kids. So what I recommend now is probably going to be what I'm going to talk about now is more for adults because what works really well for me are bitter greens and sauerkraut. So arugula, dandelion greens, adding a bit of that to your salads, adding a tablespoon or two of sauerkraut. You know, cabbage is fantastic if you're making a coleslaw. So you can get your kids to start to get used to these flavors, ideally, you know, introducing it a little young so that they start to think of these as normal. But we know the bitter, the sour really helps our digestive tract, our liver to get things moving. And it's kind of a flavor that we often neglect because we're just so used to sweet things. So doing that, even a little apple cider vinegar, lemon and water can help the digestive juices. And then we even use a lot of bitter herbs, right? There's a lot of digestive formulas where there's herbs like gentian, for example. It tastes really strong, but if you think about it, like in different cultures, right, you have an aperitif where you're having, you know, a little bit of liqueur that has some bitter herbs in it, and that really does help you digest. So there is something to that.
Absolutely. And again, it really gets your digestive system kind of primed or you know, it really does promote that release of stomach acid, release of digestive enzymes, release of bile to really get things moving. And again, that movement is really key. Definitely other things that I think about is, again, kind of supporting your gut bacteria. Do you have enough sources of that good bacteria, that beneficial bacteria, probiotics, again, either in fermented foods or in a supplement? And when we talk about also that gut bacteria, then we think about what feeds that bacteria? What are some prebiotics that you can use? And again, that's where fibers is so key to feed that good bacteria as well. We just talked about all those kind of different sources of fiber. Then definitely the next, maybe something that I even kind of keep towards the top of my list is my favorite, magnesium. I'm such a huge fan of magnesium. And then when you think of, you know, certain forms of magnesium are not as well absorbed as others. But it almost acts kind of that same way that something like Restorilax would act. It does provide a bit of like an osmotic laxative if it's not absorbed right into your cells and your tissues. So something like magnesium citrate is almost kind of the best of both worlds that way, where you can get some of that stool softening, but also you can get some magnesium absorbed, which is a really gentle, natural muscle relaxant, nervous system relaxant, and, you know, a mineral that's needed by literally hundreds of different enzyme and hormone pathways around the body.
Yeah, that's a great tool to have in your toolbox, and you can use it in kids. You just want to start low and not give too high of an amount, because it can go the opposite direction and get, you know, loose stools or diarrhea. You want to give the minimum effective dose, right? Where they're going to have a good stool, it's easy to pass, but it's still formed. So that's the ultimate goal. Everybody has a little bit of a different bowel tolerance, but you don't want to start too high in kids. And there's different reference ranges depending on the age. And sometimes people will use some vitamin C, because that, you know, you can take in higher amounts to help with constipation, because if you have too much, it causes diarrhea. But magnesium is typically the favorite, right? You can add in a little bit of vitamin C for some immune support, but you don't want to have to rely on that all the time. Magnesium's great because it does relax kind of the musculature too, right? And relaxes the intestines a little bit. So you get a double whammy there. And yeah, and then even thinking about positioning when you're having a stool, right? So when Stuart was in diapers, he'd squat down, right? He'd like squat down, have his stool, and then he'd be all done. It was easy to pass. And now we're sitting, you know, we're not, you know, squatting like we used to when we're older and we're using the toilet. So getting a stool or a squatty potty. So you want to, you know, prop your feet up on the stool in front of the, like, and put it in front of the toilet. And that just helps with your actual positioning. So the stool comes out a lot easier. So we may be, you know, needing to reconfigure our toilets and our washrooms just to help with the passage of our stool as well.
Absolutely. And you know, you think of other cultures as well. You know, you think back in the day when we were able to travel, there are some cultures that don't use seated toilets, you know, that really do have that tradition of squatting, even into adulthood as well. So, you know, really looking at your positioning to, again, support the anatomy and the gravity to move things down is, I think, is really key as well. Another one, a favorite herb of mine is that sometimes can get missed is called slippery elm. And it can be found in like capsules, even, you know, throat lozenges, and even like a throat coat tea will have some slippery elm. It's very soothing for the lining of the digestive tract and can really, again, help to move things more. So again, a really gentle herb. And, you know, there's a number of other herbs and even homeopathic medicines and remedies to help to relax, especially if you are impacted by stress or your kids are impacted by stress. And that's one of the factors that is kind of slowing things down and causing constipation. I have like two patients of mine where I'll never forget. They were, you know, dealing with constipation for years and years. And this is where, you know, one approach isn't going to work for every single person. So everyone's a little bit different. I had, you know, one woman who came in who was, you know, 20 years plus of experiencing constipation. And it was a matter of a couple of tablespoons of ground flaxseed. And she actually mixed it in some water and drank it every evening. And that completely resolved her constipation. And then, another woman who came in, it was getting those bitter herbs and doing a digestive formula with a homeopathic combination to help to support relaxation. And that's what did the trick for her. So everyone's a little bit different.
Yeah, I just got a message from one of my patients. She's like, yes, the ground flaxseed works. I'm good. I don't need to rely on my Bran buds anymore. So, and then so many patients too, like if they're eating a highly processed diet, there's not much like water in, you know, foods that you're buying in packages. So that's really constipating too. And think like powdered potatoes and, you know, processed cereals and things. So that can really aggravate constipation. So just switching to a real food diet where the only ingredient is what is the real food in there, that can really make a huge difference as well. And yeah, the slippery elm's awesome. Great to add into, you know, oatmeal, applesauce, a little bit in a small amount of smoothie, even, you know, for young kids, you might start with it one teaspoon once or twice a day. If you are using slippery elm, just use it a few hours away from vitamins or if your kids take any medications, because it does coat the tract, as you said, Tony, but yeah, it can impair with sometimes absorption then, because it's kind of like a protective layer. So, but it works really well as like a mucilaginous herb to move things through. So there's a lot of great naturopathic tools and, you know, start to incorporate some of them, even an abdominal massage, right? Like you're going to get that nice nice connection with your child. You can do it in several different ways. You know, at the very basic, you're just, when you're looking at your child, they're lying down, you're massaging gently with flat fingers clockwise. There is what's called an I love you massage. It's a, you know, it sounds tricky, but it's pretty easy once you figure it out. But you massage down from the top, like the left rib cage, left side of the rib cage, down to the left pelvis. You do that 10 times with flat fingers. And then you do an upside down L from the right rib cage to the left rib cage, down to the left pelvis. You do that 10 times. That's an upside down L. And then it's an upside down U from your right kind of hip up to your right rib cage, across to your left rib cage, and down to your left hip. And do that 10 times. And you can use a little bit of castor oil that can help just with, you know, reducing a little bit of discomfort. We know it supports movement through the gut, through the lymphatic system, some anti-inflammatory effects. And then it's like a nice kind of gliding feeling with your fingers too. So that can be really useful. And it doesn't have to take long. It could just be, you know, a few minutes before bed. So they're getting nice and relaxed too.
And using castor oil on the skin is a nice, gentle effect for the digestive system rather than drinking castor oil. I don't know if anyone's old enough listening to this that was fed castor oil as a kid by their parents or their grandparents, but we really want to avoid that and just use, again, a gentle a way of absorbing that castor oil through our skin. And that can be easily used in your kids as well as yourself.
Definitely. So yeah, you've got some tools there mm-hmm. to incorporate for yourself and your kids. And there's a recipe for Dr. Aviva's fruit balls, which are great for constipation. She's a medical doctor and it has some dates in there and other good things, raisins, mm-hmm. etc. So we can link to that. And we'll link back to your recipe as well, Tony, to give them some energy ball fiber containing recipe as well.
For sure. And really, if all else fails, I would really encourage people, again, not going ahead, you know, seeing a family doctor to really get properly assessed, but then even looking at other healthcare professionals who do have more training and experience in treating constipation, especially in kids. There are, you know, like you said, pelvic floor physiotherapists, osteopathic practitioners who have a lot of experience and can really, and you know, guide parents along, you know, as well as us as naturopathic doctors too.
Definitely. So it's, you know, it takes a village, right? So there's so many ways to support someone who's suffering from constipation or other health conditions. So reach out for help. And yeah, if there's any of those red flags, like it's chronic, there's mucus, blood, extreme, you know, pain, you definitely want to get that checked out sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. All right. So instead of, you know, keeping talking about poo, let's switch gears. Let's stop the poo talk for now. And I would love to hear your supermom moment for the week, Lisa.
Okay, I'll share mine. I'm pretty proud of it because it was Stuart's birthday on Friday. And, you know, COVID birthdays suck. So I had to be creative. So I thought, okay, what's going to be really fun and kind of a surprise for him? So I came up with three things. So we did a pinata, which he had so much fun. He'd never seen one before. So he had so much fun trying to hit it down with a hockey stick. And I filled it with some goodies. So he loved that. And then I made what's called like smash boxes. I don't know if you've seen this, but I guess I kind of knew about it, but Stuart likes a show on YouTube called Ryan's World, and they made like, it's like all these boxes stacked together, wrapped in like paper, and you punch through the paper and inside the box, there's like a game or a toy. So I just like jimmied this shelving unit we have. I took out the six drawers and I put wrapping paper over each of those sections, and I put one of the toys or games that he already has in one in each of those. So then when he woke up on Saturday morning, he like had to smash through it, and then we'd play the game. And he actually got excited about games and toys that he was kind of, you know, sick of playing or kind of abandoned. So we'd punch one and then we'd play the game, and then he'd punch another and we'd play the game. So that was really fun. And then I've been wanting to make hot chocolate bombs. I don't know if you've heard about those where...
Oh yeah, that's all the rage now, right?
But I did it in a way that was like super easy. And yes, he got like the Kinder eggs, but you know what? The Kinder eggs are a great way to make it. So you buy the Kinder egg, you open it up gently and take out the toy part. And then you just melt the edges on like a pan. And then I just filled it with carob powder and I got him, you know, some marshmallows. And then you just stick the two sides together. And he had that, but he wasn't actually as excited about that as I thought. So we were more excited about it. But yeah, so that's an easy way. Use like the, like those Kinder eggs, right? You don't have to make the shell yourself and then stuff it with whatever you want. So I was really proud about just trying to be creative and make it fun during a pandemic.
Oh, Lisa, that sounds awesome. I would be super excited about all of those things. I actually think I want those things for my birthday next.
Great. Awesome. I'm glad you have some ideas.
And with Frankie's birthday in June, I'm definitely filing away some of those ideas in the back of my mind. And maybe I should make a note to listen to this episode again before her birthday.
Buy the pinata suit. I think it's like the popular item because there's not much else to do for birthdays. So we wanted to find like a cutesy one, but we got like a cactus one and he still loved it. But we couldn't get like a Paw Patrol or dinosaur. Oh, so that's okay.
Yeah, I'll put that on my shopping list. Paw Patrol pinata for Frankie's next birthday, and then just hide it away in the garage or something.
There you go. But Tony, I know you're doing a great job, but can you dig deep and think of a mama mess up?
Yes, I can dig deep because it just happened to be this morning. Well, yesterday, it was lovely outside. Now, in Calgary, we've gotten a lot of snow. And it was so beautiful that we went outside. We had a nice little walk along the creek. And of course, when it's nice and we've had so much snow, there's puddles everywhere. So, and Frankie loves puddles. So she was jumping. And of course, when we got home, her feet were soaked, her pants were soaked, even though she was wearing still wearing her snow pants. Anyway, and then this morning, getting Frankie off to day home, I realized I forgot to really make sure that her boots dried. So she had wet boots going to day home. So I thought, okay, how am I going to manage this? And she didn't want to wear any other boots. She wanted to wear the boots that were wet. So I put an extra pair of socks on her thinking that that was going to be enough to soak up the water. But no, we got to day home and both pairs of socks were soaked. So anyway, that was a mama mess up. I could have easily made sure that the boots were dry last night, but nope, didn't do it.
Oh, you're not the only one. I remember, do you actually remember wearing, like, we used to put plastic bags on our feet and then put our boots on? So I guess my mom forgot a lot.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day and I didn't think of that this morning. Okay, I'm going to file that away because I have a feeling that this may not be the last time I experience this mama mess up. So
so you're not alone. There was many a days I remember wearing that. And it was really uncomfortable, but at least my feet were dry. It's kind of slippery.
Oh, you got to have those hacks, right?
Totally. Oh, you're awesome. Still doing a great job.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. That's sweet. So do you have a mama must-have for this week?
I do. Yes, Stuart got an amazing present from his aunt and uncle. So it's called the Looney Storyteller, L-U-N-I-I. It's like this little box. It's an audiobook device, and it's simple to use. It lets you kind of choose your own adventure. So you pick the character, and a little kind of image comes up, and he selects it by just pressing a button. And then you pick the location, and then you pick the item. So there's so many different stories on it. And then I guess you can download a whole bunch as well. So he, you know, each day after he got it, was able to sit on the couch for like half an hour and just listen to these audio stories and be entertained. And it's screen free. So I would definitely recommend that.
That sounds awesome.
And I think yours is related to a book. So your mama must have.
Speaking of books, you know, it's nice to have a book that you just want to delve into so that, you know, especially to read before bed. I really prefer reading like an actual real book instead of, you know, a book on and using a screen. Like you said, really want to stay away from screens before you go to bed. So I had previously talked about watching Bridgerton on Netflix, and it got me really excited about reading books again, similar books to, you know, this kind of Regency romance, and the fact that it was based on a book series. I thought, okay, I'm just going to go and put these books on hold from my Calgary Public Library, and they have a great hold system, curbside pickup. So my first Bridgerton book, it's actually the prequel, was ready to pick up on Saturday. So I picked it up, and then Frankie went to bed early. So I sat down, I read the book, and even though, again, sleep is so, so important to me, this book was so, so fun to read that I read the whole thing in one sitting, and I actually like stayed up until midnight to read the book.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was really fun. So the Girl with the Make-Believe Husband by Julia Quinn. Again, if you're looking for a really fun book to read, again, you know, something light, I really highly recommend her books. She's a great writer, and it was really fun to read. Very engaging.
Amazing. Wow, you just blew through that one. I'll just make sure I start reading it in the morning and have enough time to finish it before bed. But I love it when the book is that good, right? It's just, you can't put it down.
Exactly. I think, again, I have some other books on hold. I think when they come, I'm really going to have to like make a plan and really like put limits on myself. Like maybe just 2 hours after Frankie goes to bed and make sure that I'm in bed by 10.
Hey, at least you were not partying.
Yeah, right.
It could have been worse.
It could have been worse for sure. So now what are you up to before we go, Lisa? What's next on the list of events that you have going on?
Yeah, I'm really excited because I'm launching a Wild Mama program. It's a 6-week program, an hour and a half a week on Wednesdays from 10:30 to 12, where new mamas that have, you know, a 1-year-old or younger approximately get together, and we have different topics that we discuss every week. So there is going to be an info session on St. Patrick's Day at, I believe it's 10:30, March 17th, and the program starts March 24th. So if you yourself are a fairly new mama, or, you know, second time around or third time around, fourth time around mama of a little one, if you know someone who is, come to the info session to find out more. It's a great way to build connection with other moms, because right now that's been, I think, really challenging to do. So it's all about real, authentic communication, sharing stories and lifting each other up and learning at the same time.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And Tony, what about you? What do you have going on?
Absolutely. I have, I've just started my hypnobirthing group, current hypnobirthing group class for expectant parents who are, again, looking for some relaxation, reducing stress, and pregnancy and in preparing for their labor and birth. So my next info session is later this month. So again, that's available on hypnobirthingcalgary.com, and again online. So you know, I definitely have lots of couples in Calgary who join us, but it's not limited to location right now. It's on Zoom. So you can find the registration and more info on there.
Amazing. I love that you're offering that.
Yeah. So necessary in this time of pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. So thanks everyone for joining us today. Again, you can find our show notes on our website, perimenopausalmamas.com, as well as some of our older episodes that may not show up on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. And absolutely email us, connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, you know, share your questions, your requests. We'd also love for you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating, especially if you enjoyed this episode. And that allows for other perimenopausal mamas to find us as well. So stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Have a great week. Till next time.
Bye.